Morning. Welcome back to the roundtable, and it is 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, and we welcome the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, to speak with WAMC's Alan Chartok. Gentlemen, good morning.
Who's a gentleman?
I think we are gentlemen.
I do. You?
It's my opinion.
Well, you're entitled to that.
Yes, that's all I'm entitled to, obviously.
No, actually, you're the governor. You've worked yourself way up to that. A lot of people mention you as a potential president of the United States, and so you're a lot more than just a gentleman. You know, that's putting yourself down unfairly.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment, although I'm sure
you think it's a mistake?
Have a different interpretation later on.
Okay. Let's begin, Governor, because I know at the top of your list for quite a while, although it is not as interesting to so many people as it should be, even though their taxable income is very affected by it, is the state is now going to challenge the 2017 federal law capping state and local deductions at $10,000, which was dismissed by a federal court. Was this a defeat for your administration? I suppose it was, because you've been saying all along has to happen. You called the SALT portion of the law unconstitutional. What's the deal?
It was a judicial defeat for the people of the state of New York. I represent the people of the state, and in this lawsuit, it's in the best interest of the people of the state. The tax reform passed by Trump was a partisan bill that literally took money from the Democratic states and gave it to the Republican states. The most obnoxious political economic program that I can remember. And this from a Republican who's against redistribution of wealth, right? We don't want to take from the rich and give to the poor. But we'll take from the rich states and we'll give to the poorer states, which happens to translate in their definition, the Democratic states to the Republican states. And it's a technical issue. And frankly, people don't understand it as well as they should. As soon as you start to talk about it, you know, people's eyes glaze over. Eliminating the deductibility of state and local taxes. But it costs New Yorkers about $14 billion. And we're already the state, Alan, that contributes more than any other state in the United States and gets back less. So, yes, we had a setback from the court. We're going to deal with that. But
how are you going to deal with it, Governor?
We're looking at whether or not we should appeal. It's not just us. We were in it with a number of states that were also aggrieved, all Democratic states. But, Alan, my job is to fight for the people of the state every way possible. And that's what I do. And that's what I always do. And I do it until the bell sounds. And this is a fight on many fronts. Congress has to change this. And our congressional representatives have to insist that they change this. And our senators have to insist that they change this. So we have a congressional fight, a judicial fight, and then ultimately a political fight. And anyone who wants to be president of the United States, I want to hear them say that they're going to fight this and repeal this SALT provision should they win for office.
What do you think the chances of the Democrats taking the Senate are, as long as you've raised it?
I think we're in a place that we've never been before. I mean, they have a poll today that says 52% of the people say this president should be impeached. This is a volatile period where I think everything is out the window. And I wouldn't be surprised at what people do when they get to the polls. I think there's going to be a record turnout because everyone is upset, and they should be, maybe for different reasons, but you have universal anxiety and disgust. And I would not be surprised at any outcome, frankly. And also, there's a long time between here and there. That's the other thing. You know, these things move so quickly. So I am not in the crystal ball prophecy business here.
You were an attorney general, of course, in New York State. And now we see Mr. Barr under tremendous pressure because he's being seen as a, you know, for want of a better word, an agent or a tool of the president. Has he damaged himself to the point where he's approaching John Mitchell territory?
I think he has lost fundamental credibility. And look, it started with the president. It always starts at the top. This president believes the justice system is a political system. Everything is political to him, and everything is friends and enemies, and there is no respect for the institution of government, nor is there respect for the institution of the Justice Department. You put in your friend, and your friend then indicts your enemies and protects you. That's his view of the justice system. He makes that clear when you hear him. Everything is personal. My attorney general, he calls it, even though our attorney general in the state is independently elected, is challenging Trump. Tish James brought a case against Trump because I had her do it, because it's all personal and the attorney general is just a tool. That's the way he sees the world. And that has infiltrated the whole Republican thinking. Congressman Reid says I should be investigated for some lunacy with the Seneca throwaway authority. Why? Because they put U.S. attorneys in and they think they're political tools. So let me use my U.S. attorney to bother and harass the Democrats. Barr is in the midst of all of this. You now have Pompeo on the phone call, Secretary of State Pompeo on the phone call with the president saying to the Ukrainian president, I'll have Barr and Giuliani call you to follow up on the investigation of Biden's son. I mean, how outrageous. And then Pompeo says nothing. Just goes back to work. I was a cabinet official. You took an oath. You're a constitutionally sworn officer. You're in the line of succession to the president of the United States. I mean, it's just now, the Democrats have to do a better job. I think the American people get this is an outrage and just another outrage. I'd like to see the Democrats do a better job. Impeachment is high crimes and misdemeanors. What does that mean, and where is the crime? Let's talk about, was this bribery? Was it extortion? Was it an abuse of power? It's not enough to say this is disgusting and this was just an embarrassment, which it was. Fine. What's the crime and the action that now justifies impeachment? And I believe they are there. You know, this conversation with the Ukrainian president wasn't just do me a favor and help me investigate Joe Biden and I'll send my buddies Barr and Giuliani. It was, oh, you want hundreds of millions of dollars in aid? Okay, do me a favor. Now, anybody knows the mayor of a city is talking to a contractor about doing work for the city, and the mayor says on the phone call, yeah, I'm thinking of giving you that contract to do the city work. By the way, do me a favor. I need to put in a new pool at my residence.
Yeah, that would be go to jail time.
That's exactly right. Well, then what is it when you're talking to the president of the Ukraine? Oh, you want hundreds of millions of dollars in aid. Do me a favor. Talk to my friend Barr and Giuliani about investigating my political opponent. And that's what the Democrats have to do now. You have Schiff in the Intelligence Committee. You have Nadler. But let's get it sharper for the American people, because they already agree that this is disgusting, disdainful. Okay, what's the crime and the basis for impeachment? And that's the next step. And I'd like to see the Democrats lead in that effort.
Now, I don't want to seem disrespectful to you, Governor, but you know, you say they appoint their buddies and their buddies do what they want for them. But don't the Democrats do the same thing? Don't you do the same thing?
No. This is, first of all, we're talking about the Justice Department, right?
Okay.
Yes, I appoint people and I'm responsible for what they do. If I appoint a commissioner and the commissioner does something bad, you don't call, you don't ask me questions, well, Commissioner X. It's me. I'm responsible. Justice is different. justice is impartial, Lady Justice blindfold. The attorney general is an independently elected official in this state. A U.S. attorney is not supposed to be a political operative. That's their oath, impartial.
Well, is our U.S. attorney in New York a political operative?
Well, we have a number of U.S. attorneys.
I said the one in Southern District, which seems to be the big one.
Well, I have to check the facts. I don't believe he was appointed by Trump. But the Southern District...
Oh, no, I think he was. I remember that Trump interviewed him. He interviewed Preet Bharara. Preet Bharara didn't make it. Then he interviewed this guy. So I think he was appointed by Trump.
Well, I have had dealings with the Southern District, and I have not detected any politics in those dealings. And
okay.
They've been forthright and cooperative. And look, they're bringing cases against Trump, right? So their actions would suggest that they're not. And it is also, I'm not saying that every U.S. attorney they appoint is willing to be political. I do believe the attitude they bring from the top is you're a political appointee. Now, it takes two to tango, right?
Right.
So.
But when he goes out of his way to interview the guy, and we all learn that he has interviewed the guy, what do you think they're talking about, tiddlywinks?
Well, look, if I was being interviewed for a U.S. attorney and I got the suggestion that this person thought that I was there to carry his or her political water, I would run. And if they had that conversation and a U.S. attorney then took the job afterwards, they were never qualified in the first place. They didn't have the integrity or the character, and they didn't understand what the position was about.
Moving on. Chris Collins, the Western New York Republican congressman, is resigning and, according to news reports, pleading guilty to an insider trading scheme. What do you do now about that seat? You can call a special election, right? Will it be a special election? Do you plan to keep the seat open through the 2020 election?
2020 is a long time away.
Yes.
And that Western New York deserves a seat. We have a lot going on in Western New York, a lot of good things going on. We just announced a really ambitious project to take down a highway that borders the water, an old Robert Moses type called the Skyway. And we need federal assistance to do that. So Democrat, Republican, we need Western New York deserves representation. So I would be inclined to fill the vacancy sooner rather than later. I have to review the law, Alan, because on the timing, once I declare an election, there's a certain amount of time to do it. I don't believe legally I can call it for this November, which would be convenient because people are going to the polls anyway. And I tend to shy away from having numerous elections. You know, voters don't want to vote multiple times. I'll go to the polls, they'll let me go once and make all the decisions. That's why I want the legislature next year should combine the presidential and the congressional and the state races all on one day. But I can't do it for this November. The question is, when can I do it? But sooner rather than later is my inclination.
Okay, while we're on the subject, shouldn't your Lieutenant Governor, Kathy Hochul, go back there and run for that seat and perhaps win it, a Democrat?
Huh. You'd have to ask Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul that question. She is great. She can do anything. She has been phenomenal as a Lieutenant Governor. I mean, she is just a great, great elected official. And whatever she wants to do in life, I would be supportive of her.
Well, won't you make a recommendation to her? Why don't you say for the good of the party and take that seat? You can do it, Kathy. Why don't you go do it?
No, I would be supportive of Kathy's decision. I'd be a little selfish. I'd like her as Lieutenant Governor because she's a great asset to the state. So I do have... I'm human, and I do have act out of self-interest at times.
Can she win? Could she
selfishly
win?
As governor? I think she could win any seat. She's just great politician and official. You know, she's a rare combination.
Well, she hasn't won it in the past. You think she'll win it? She could win it this time. Things have changed.
Oh, yes, I think things have changed, and I think she could win it. I mean, just as we look at where we started the conversation, sure, I think even the Republicans are disgusted with what Trump is doing. And Trump then radiates down because they are all Trump water carriers, right? This whole Ukrainian thing. Common sense. I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. Just stand up and say, boy, that was disgusting. I don't know if it's illegal and if he should go to jail, but it was terrible. They all took the Republican oath where I am going to be more loyal to my political party than the people I represent. And that does not fly anymore. And it shouldn't. It shouldn't. Yes, I'm a Democrat, Alan. But if a Democrat does something outrageous, I'm not going to cover my eyes and ears and mouth and say, well, it's a Democrat, and therefore I won't say anything. And I think what these congressional people have done and what the Republican senators have done started with being mum on gun violence. What gun violence? I don't see any gun violence. These are just random episodes. They did nothing on guns, and now it blends into they won't do anything on impeachment, and they stand with the president in a heinous act.
Okay, now I got to move on because I want you to talk to me a little bit about something that was somewhat embarrassing to me. You said to me on this very program, you know, that darn right that I believe those were your exact words, darn right that Pelosi should have brought up this impeachment thing and done what she's done. Then you went and talked to Governor Chris Christie in New Jersey and seemed to walk back your support of impeachment, which you discussed with me. Then a spokesman for you said you actually support the inquiry. What's going on?
No, I didn't walk it back at all. There are two separate statements. Early on, impeachment, the push for impeachment was from a small group of Congress people who were pushing Pelosi towards impeachment, and Pelosi's point was it was premature.
And you
that
said they were left wing. You said they were left wing Democrats.
Yes, that was months ago. We discussed it months ago when you had very early voices saying Nancy Pelosi should move for impeachment, and Nancy Pelosi was saying, let's get the facts first. That was very early on. And I said at that time, I agree with Nancy Pelosi. Let's get the facts first before you rush forward for impeachment, because it would be irresponsible and it would be politically damaging if you were to move for impeachment too early. But that was months ago. Then the facts unfolded. Pelosi was right. Give it time. Let the facts unfold. Let the American people see the facts. Then you have the Ukraine call. And I said, not only darn right, she does not have an option at that point. Now you have a constitutional duty to act. You can't. The way I just said the Republicans put their head in the sand, Pelosi had a constitutional duty to act. And then you saw the entire Congress come and support Nancy Pelosi's position, virtually the entire Congress.
Democratic Congress.
Democratic Congress.
The Democrats in the Congress.
So when you look at the movie, I think, by the way, Nancy Pelosi was exactly right, and I supported her all along the way. Early on, it was premature. And when you had those small number of extreme leftist Democrats saying she should move for impeachment months ago, that was premature. And a premature move for impeachment would have been irresponsible governmentally and politically dangerous.
Do you think he should be impeached?
Hold it. And she resisted it, and she was right. And then as the facts unfolded, she said, now we're moving forward with the inquiry. And I said she was darn right. And I think they should move forward. Yes, I do.
Think
they should move
impeached.
Forward. And I that's why I said the next step is let them start to lay out the legal case. You made the political case, and 52% of the people support you. Now refine the legal case. you need, we went through this with Clinton. We know what impeachment is. What is the legal case for the impeachment? High crimes and misdemeanors. What in that call was illegal? Where is the case against Pompeo for abuse of his power? Is it extortion of the Ukrainian president? Is it bribery? Is it misuse of the power of the presidency? Let's define the legal case, and that's the next challenge and the next step, and that's where the Democrats should go.
So you were talking to Chris Christie. Are you a big fan of Chris Christie?
The former Republican? I did a lot of work with Chris Christie, and I got a lot of good things done for the state of New York.
Yeah, but what about Bridgegate? What about Bridgegate, closing down the bridge?
Bridgegate, obviously, that was purely a New Jersey and Chris Christie affair. But I got a lot of good done. You know, my father worked with Governor Tom Keene.
Yep.
And I remember that experience. And, yeah, Democrat, Republican, you're there to deliver for the state. And what we did with the Port Authority while Christie was there, you haven't seen it yet and you haven't felt it yet, but it's going to be unfolding. New LaGuardia Airport, new JFK Airport. It's transformative. What we're going to be doing with the MTA.
Okay, let's stop right there, because I haven't got all that much time, but I wanted to ask you about the MTA, Governor, and I'm sorry if it appears disrespectful. The MTA, you've been critical of the MTA. Is there a better way to have an MTA board than what we have here? You're about to put a lot of money into the MTA.
The MTA has been flawed from inception. When they do a political science, a governmental class, the MTA was one of the worst examples of government policy. Rockefeller, they set up the MTA to have deniability. The concept was, this is a bad business, it's a messy business. They set the trains, never run on time. You have to charge tolls to people, raise fares. Let's set up the MTA so every politician has deniability. The mayor gets some seats, but he doesn't control. I get some seats, but I don't control. The county executive gets some seats, but he doesn't control. The ultimate deniability. It was the ugliest political, pragmatic legalization of an authority.
So
everybody
how do you
has
fix
deniability,
it? How do you fix
but then
it?
Nobody has accountability.
Okay. How do you fix it?
Well, what you do is, even though I don't have legal control, and the newspapers like to say he has effective control, which is just garbage. There is no such concept as effective control.
Well, you have more members on it. You have more members than the others do.
So what? I don't have control. It's a 17-member board. I don't control it. And it's binary. You control it or you don't control
it.
Well,
when it's time to hold up your hand, you have the most votes.
Yes, but I can lose any vote on any given day. So I don't have control. But I don't want to fight that anymore because they want to say, you have more votes than anyone else. But I don't have control. And by the way, it was set up so the governor didn't have control, so the governor could deny it. I'm past that. I'm going to do everything I can to make it work anyway.
You got a better idea?
If I could, I would change the legal formulation of the board, and I would say either the mayor runs it or the governor runs it. Give the mayor the New York City Transit Authority, which is a New York City subway system, which, by the way, they own, which nobody knows. They only lease annually management to the MTA. Let the mayor run it. Or let the governor run it, but let them run it and give them control and give them authority like I have over every other agency, and then when they screw up, blame me. I recoil at, you want to blame me, and I don't have control. That I recoil at.
So just to be clear, you're calling for either mayoral or gubernatorial, which I think is what's really afoot here, control of the MTA, give it to you, just like some mayors and others argue in education. I should be in charge of education, hold me responsible, right?
It is the same argument. I am not advocating for it because it's politically impossible, because the legislature and the political forces won't allow it. Okay, so what I've said to myself when I talk to myself late at night and have interesting conversations where I disagree with myself, I said, mm-hmm. you know what? I don't control it. Let me do everything I humanly can to make a difference. And I challenge them publicly, and I offer myself and my services publicly to try to change the culture of that bureaucracy. And it's one of the worst bureaucracies I've ever dealt with. And I was at HUD, where that was the worst federal bureaucracy, and we changed that. And I do it more by force of personality than anything else, because the problem at the MTA is the culture. It has been a bureaucracy that has been allowed to run for decades with no accountability. So now it's governed by the forces within. It has an incestuous relationship with the contracting community. It is a bureaucracy that has gotten away with doing nothing. They started a project, the East Side Access Tunnel. Rockefeller and Lindsay broke ground. It's still going on. So I'm challenging the bureaucracy publicly. I said when they came with that L-Train Tunnel plan, L-Train Tunnel is a tunnel between Manhattan and Brooklyn. 400,000 people ride the L-Train. It's larger than the population of Buffalo or Newark, okay? They were going to close the tunnel down for 2 years. I said, it can't be. It can't be that you have to close a tunnel down for 2 years. No, I'm not an engineer. But I got the best minds I could. I went into the tunnel. We did an analysis. I said, I think there's a better way to do it. I think you're a bureaucracy, and you just do everything the way you did it. And you don't have to close down this tunnel at all. I think you can do it at nights and weekends. And I got the dean of Cornell and the dean of Columbia. And we have a better way. And you know what? We didn't close it down. It only nights and weekends. We're ahead of schedule. It's been a phenomenal success. And the repair of the tunnel is better than ever.
So why do you have to be the head of it all if you had your way anyway?
I say it again.
Why do you have to be the head of it all? In other words, why does the agency have to report to you if you had your way with them anyway?
Well, because the way I do it is just by injecting myself publicly. Now, I'll give you the next step. The capital plan, you're right. They just came up with a capital plan of $50 billion, which is the largest capital plan in history, which we need. I believe that, not just for the city subway, for Long Island Railroad, Metro North. And you're right, it's a concern to the entire state because it's a big revenue
sure.
generator. They came up with a $50 billion plan. What's supposed to happen now? Well, they put forth a $50 billion plan. It then goes to a committee called the CPRB. And the CPRB is another innocuous, anonymous committee where the State Senate, State Assembly, the Mayor of New York, the Governor get to appoint somebody to this committee. And that committee, any one person on that committee can veto the plan. How can that be?
Okay, I got it. I got one more minute. I want to ask you something.
Okay, hold on. So this is what I want to say to the I want to be my representative on the CPRB. And I think the mayor should be his representative, and the Senate leader should be her representative, and Carl Heastie should be his representative. Because if you want to veto a $50 billion plan that affects half of the state, then you should stand up and do it in your own name and not some anonymous individual. So I'm going to say to them, we should be the CPRB. If somebody's going to veto the plan, I'm not going to hide behind my appointee, and I'm not going to go through another Amazon with the state Senate where they hide behind an individual senator. This is a $50 billion plan. You want to veto it. The mayor wants to veto it. Put on your big boy pants. stand up, look at the camera, and say, I'm vetoing the $50 billion plan, and this is why.
Okay.
I put in the law that they have to explain their vote, but then they have to be an appointee who actually has a public profile, because who cares if Joe Smith, who you never heard of, vetoes the plan and has a definition. Let's get real political accountability and transparency.
I had a lot more I wanted to ask you. Obviously,
go ahead.
Well, no, we can't. You see, it's a big radio station. We got other things happening. So we do apologize to you, Governor, because you've given us your valuable time. But we'll have to wait until the next time, assuming that there will be a next time. It's always great to talk to you, sir, and thank you for being with us.
And by the way, I talked to your governor yesterday.
I know.
And I'm not going to tell you what I said to him or what he said to me.
Yeah.
Now you have to live in anticipation.
Terrific.